very good morning to you. Welcome into the program. Now, I'm getting calls in about the farming community and getting calls in about everything today. So I'll try and cope with those in a few minutes' time, get to them rather, and read them out for you. But I want to go indeed to Dr. Ronan Margy, who joins me on the line, clinical lead of the Irish Heart Attack Audit. And the Irish Heart Attack Audit 2021 and the Irish Heart Attack Audit 2021 Summary Report has just been launched. And he joins me on the line. Dr. Margy, good morning to you.
Hi, good morning. Thanks very much for having me.
Thank you for joining us today. I suppose it's everyone's fear is to get a heart attack, but the audit that you've done is very, very informative.
Yeah, so I think this is our second report. Our first report last year focused at the performance of the heart attack care system and the processes of care and the outcomes of care for patients with heart attack from 2017 through to 2020. And this year's report looks back at the calendar year 2021. There's two main types of heart attack. There's one type of heart attack called ST elevation heart attack, which tends to be more sinister, larger heart attacks with larger impacts on heart function and more likely to be fatal. And then there's a second type of heart attack called non-ST segment elevation heart attack. And our report really looks at how the health service copes with treating ST elevation heart attack. And the reason for that is that there's a very, very effective treatment called primary angioplasty, which is a procedure done through an artery at the wrist, usually where doctors thread a wire across a blocked artery and open it up as a balloon in the throes of a heart attack to terminate the heart attack or stop the heart attack. And that's been proven to be really, really effective at preventing long-term complications and reducing death from that particular type of heart attack.
Can I ask you internationally,
that's been sort of established as the best practice treatment, and there's timelines around how a service like the heart attack service should be structured to deliver that carefully and safely. And that's really what our audit focuses on.
And can I ask you, just as a human being, how does a human being know the difference between one elevation heart attack and another elevation heart attack? You know, does the patient do in that regard, or a family member?
Yeah, so it's an excellent question. So the key is everybody needs to respond to symptoms of a possible heart attack. And what we're really encouraging the public to do is to react early. In our audit, we saw that only 44% of patients with symptoms that ended up turning out to be a real genuine heart attack actually sought help within an hour of when those symptoms started. And if people call 999 and ask for an ambulance service or an advanced paramedic reporting that they suspect they may have symptoms of a heart attack, that advanced paramedic or ambulance team is able to do an ECG at your home. And that can diagnose an ST elevation heart attack. And if it does, the process of treating that is started straight away. And our audit clearly shows that when patients are identified before hospital by the ambulance service, they have a much faster journey through the service. They meet the timelines for treatment more substantially, and they get treated faster and have a better outcome. So what we really want to do is we want to really encourage people to first of all recognize and react to symptoms, but really get across to the general public that that pre-hospital diagnosis with an ECG by the ambulance service really saves time. And by saving time, it means faster treatment overall, and that directly translates into better outcomes, less mortality or death from heart attack, and less complications. And that's consistently seen across the country in our data, regardless of where people are treated, that people who get diagnosed pre-hospital by the ambulance service have a much faster delivery of treatment.
Dr. Ronan Margy, can I ask you, how do you identify that you're having a heart attack?
Yeah, so again, it's a great question. And what we'd ask is, the system is meant to have a built-in redundancy. We don't mind having false alarms. So if someone has symptoms suspicious for a heart attack, and it can be hard to tell, but typically that might be pressure, heaviness, tightness, weight on the front of the chest, up into the throat or neck, through to the back or between the shoulders, into the arm. They feel clammy, sweaty, nauseous, deeply uncomfortable in their chest. Or sometimes in people with diabetes, or often in women, or often in older persons, they may just have bad indigestion symptoms, or just don't feel right, or feel very unwell or clammy, that you sort of think, could this be a heart attack, and seek help. And rather than introducing a delay where you might go to your local hospital, or you might decide to wait overnight to react to your symptoms, call for help. The ambulance service can do an ECG at your home. If it's normal, then they can decide whether you still need to go to your local hospital for further testing to rule out a heart issue. But if it's abnormal, especially if it shows this ST elevation pattern on the ECG trace, the ambulance service is very effective at getting you to hospital. Just over 80% of patients were brought, you know, collected directly by the ambulance service, are brought to a PCI centre where this life-saving treatment can be given within the recommended 90-minute window. And that's really good. That's better, for example, than the performance in the UK at the moment. Mm-hmm. And it's as good as other European jurisdictions. So we know if we can diagnose people early, with the ambulance service, we can transport them promptly to these centres where they can get treatment within that golden 120-minute window that we sort of strive for internationally.
I have to put myself in the position of somebody that might have, might have indigestion from time to time. So it's figuring out what is the difference between the indigestion and a heart attack from there. And I suppose I would be, and it hasn't happened to me, thank God, but I would be of the opinion, it's indigestion. I don't want to waste people's time, and I shouldn't be wasting people's time, so I won't bother calling the ambulance. But you're saying that's wrong. If you've got the other symptoms that go with it that you've outlined, you should call the emergency services.
Yeah, it's better to be safe than sorry. And just like the campaign that was ran earlier in the year after the stroke audit results about trying to help the public recognize and be aware of possible symptoms of stroke so that they can react fast, and everybody knows that fast mnemonic. Similarly, yeah, with heart attack, we really don't want people ignoring symptoms, because we clearly see in our data that if people react early, and especially if they get that ECG diagnosis at home, they can be treated very promptly, and it makes a real difference in their outcome. And, you know, obviously that'll be a challenge for the health service, and particularly the ambulance service, to meet the demand that goes from that. But, you know, the national leadership from the ambulance service want that demand placed in them. They want the resources to be able to meet that demand. They want to be able to deliver this service. And the data clearly shows that when, you know, the ambulance service perform this ECG trace and establish the diagnosis, that the system works really quickly to transport the patient. And that makes a key difference. Time is heart muscle. And the quicker people react, the quicker the ambulance service makes the diagnosis of an ECG, and the quicker they transport you to these PCI centres, the better patients do.
Can I ask you then, if you don't mind, Dr. Margie, the ST elevation trace that's done that shows it's that heart attack, what about if it's the other heart attack indeed? Is that fatal then?
Yes, so again, there's standardized pathways of care for those heart attacks, and there's medications that are given to people with those suspected heart attacks to treat the heart attack initially. And all of those patients should be transported for an angiogram, which is a photograph of the arteries that carry blood to the heart, yeah, within 24 hours. That's the best practice internationally, and that's what the health service has geared up to deliver through the optimal pathway of care for suspected heart attack. And there are pathways in place to make to care for those patients as well. But the urgency about reacting to the ST elevation is particularly acute for people with that type of heart attack, because those are very serious heart attacks where one of the main three arteries of the heart is occluded, and if it's not opened, it will result in very significant heart muscle damage. It's not that the other heart attacks are any less important. In fact, there's many more people every year that have the non-ST elevation heart attacks, but there's slightly more time to treat those patients, and there's more treatment options available for those patients.
Somebody's texted in and said that I'm from a family that has a history of cardiac illness, so I'm always very conscious of what Dr. Markey is talking about today. So I'm always trying to mind myself.
Yeah, so again, most of us who are adults should be trying to mind ourselves, and looking after our heart health is something that should begin early in life, and it should be something that we carry on throughout all of our adult life. The most important thing to help reduce your lifetime risk of heart attack is really to get to know your cholesterol, your blood pressure numbers, and try and keep both your blood pressure and cholesterol as low as possible throughout most of your adult life. In particular, we know that bad cholesterol, called LDL cholesterol, is really strongly associated with early heart disease and more plaque in our arteries. So the longer we keep our LDL cholesterol lower, the less likely we are to end up with blockages in the future. In addition to that, what we saw on our audit over the last couple of years is consistently much higher rates of smoking in people who have ST elevation heart attacks. In our audit this year, the smoking rate was 38%. That's way too high. The background population rate of smoking is only 18%. So in people with ST elevation heart attack, the smoking rate's almost twice the background population rate. And it really hammers home the point that smoking is really bad for how our arteries function, and it's really bad for making plaque in our arteries unstable or more likely to rupture and cause heart attack. And if the message hasn't sunk in the wider population yet, it's really important that people stop smoking as soon as possible. We hope never start smoking in the first place.
Dr. Ronan Margie, thanks for joining us. Where would you send them for further information, not just on the audit, but on information in general when it comes to cardiac arrest?
The Irish Heart Foundation have a fantastic patient information website, and they have patient information booklets that people can request. They can download off the internet, or they can request by post. And then locally in the west of Ireland, you've got a fantastic cardiac charity, CREE, and I'm sure there's patient resources on their webpage as well that people can access.
All right, if you've been affected by what we've spoken about with Dr. Margie today, 091-544-310 is the number for CREE in Galway. That's 091-544-310. Don't hesitate to ring the ambulance. And don't hesitate to ring CREE as well today on 091-544-310. The information is there and they'll give it to you from there. Let's take control of our own lives. Let's do the right thing for ourselves, and we'll have a better quality of life as we get older.
Motoring slot in association with Colm Quinn BMW Select. The ultimate finance at Colm Quinn. Whatever BMW model you choose, BMW Select has tailored finance available that is just as impressive as your new car. Contact Colm Quinn BMW on 091 753 888.
Now, Gerry Murphy joins me in studio, and he's driving a beautiful Ford Kuga plug-in hybrid, and he sits opposite me today. Morning to you, Gerry.
How are you? Keith?
Good to talk to you. Ford Kuga, it's a nice looking car you have again today.
Well, what it is sort of, I suppose, the end of the line for the traditional type car. We will see the removal of the Kuga eventually from the catalogue, but the one I've got out there is a plug-in hybrid, which is obviously very useful in certain areas. You get about 50 to 60 kilometres in electric once you charge it fully. And after that, it just clicks into petrol. It has a 2.5 petrol engine in it, which is more than adequate for a car like that. CO2 emissions, they're telling us 32 grams per kilometre, and that puts it into band A of the tax band. So basically, you're paying €120 a year for your annual road tax. It's got lots of bits and bobs with it. They've packed this car pretty heavily with technology and styling. And it has got that lovely blue colour, but it's got lovely additions like the red brake calipers, the black roof rails, ST line full body styling kit on it and things like that. So it's really well put together. Price-wise, the titanium model, which is the one there, starts from 42,204. The ST line PHEV plug-in hybrid is 44,177. And if you stick a few extras, additional things on that, like heads-up display and driver assistance, front camera, adaptive cruise control, and a whole bunch of other things, the sitting on the road price out there, 45,764. A lot of car for the money.
A lot of money for the car.
But when you think, you know, for 3.5 grand less, you can basically get into a Kuga. It hasn't changed an awful lot over the years. From a drivability, it's a Ford. Yeah. It drives lovely. One of the things I do like about Fords is they put in this sync system, which is the interchange between driver and the technology. Years ago, but they've upgraded it and upgraded it and upgraded it, and now it's really well put together. And once you get used to it, it's so easy to use.
I'm not saying it's not worth the money, but I thought, in my head, I thought the Ford Kuga plug-in would have been a lot cheaper than that.
Yeah, the Ford Kuga would be cheaper, but when you put in the plug-in hybrid technology into a Jurassic, you know, it's going to cost you a little bit more. Does it pay for itself as far as getting the value out of it? I think it does. If you're around town and you plug it in every evening and you're using a house charging system,
yeah.
I think it pays for itself because it doesn't use petrol early on in your journey.
When you're doing it. Interesting. Very nice looking car, though. The Volkswagen ID Buzz.
Talk of the town. Talk of the country since it became Irish Car of the Year last November. I've been finding it very hard to get into it, but we eventually got into it last week. It is one of those quirky things. The design of it is kind of based on the old Volkswagen minibuses going back years, where you'll remember the old one with the split windscreen
and
the windows. And I mean, it's designed in or around that. Completely different, may I add, as far as driving it. Full electric, has all the quirkiness. The one I had a yellow base and a white, creamy white roof, two-tone version, and that yellow and white was carried into the interior.
Nice looking vehicle.
It's three yellow and white, and the dashboard was strips of yellow and white and what have you. So that's what made it interesting.
You'd want to like the yellow then, wouldn't you?
You would, but yeah, you can get it in other colours, okay, obviously, as well. What I did like about it, it was, as soon as I sat into it, it became part of it. A very easy electric vehicle to drive. And the other thing about it is, the interface. I keep talking about this interface between the driver and the screens. At least the ID Buzz, when you hit an icon on the screen, it reacted instantly. Mm-hmm. There was no time to go and hit it a couple of times to make it work. This worked straight away every time. Now, you're sitting down, thank God for that. The price of it, now it's only a 5-seater. It's described as an MPV. An MPV would probably require 7 seats in most families.
5-seater.
Thinking,
go on,
this is only a 5-seater. €77,590.
Should we just get two?
Yeah, but the other thing about the interior, most of the panelling inside it is hard plastic. There's very little soft touch panels, apart from your armrest,
okay,
and the car, and the drawer.
Would they make a good taxi?
You could use it as a taxi, yeah. It's easy to get in and out of, yeah. Okay. It's got all the sort of things you'd want to go with it. I think it's a statement from Volkswagen. Look, lads, this is what we're capable of doing. This is what we promised we would do.
It
took them about 5 years from its concept to delivery,
okay,
for Volkswagen. But you know what? Kind of liked it.
You would, of course. You love expensive things.
Absolutely.
So you
do, yeah. Did like it.
Come here to me. Finally, what's August sales like?
Down by 3% from August of 12 months ago. It's the first month of the year that they have redressed. I don't know, is that much of a surprise this time of the year? An awful lot of people don't buy cars once the July figures are over. 8,131 sold compared to 8,154. So it's a very small number,
it's still a healthy amount of cars being sold.
Yeah, they're still not back. They're still not back to pandemic times, but they're getting there. Mm. They're close enough. Light commercials, which we always mention, are up 5.7%. good for business, good to see it. Heavy goods vehicles are also increased by 24%. So okay. That's heavy trucks and buses and stuff like that. So not bad. 1,776 new electric vehicles registered compared to 1,484 in August of 2022. That's up nearly 20%. But petrol is still the biggest seller.
Okay.
On 30%. So
all right.
There you go.
All right. Now, the next time you ring me, I want you to ring me in a nice, cheap, good value car.
I'd have to check to see what I have next week. I have a Doblo van coming shortly, so that might fit in. Okay. But listen, cars aren't cheap anymore, Keith. I'm afraid prices have been eking up for a long, long time. So I don't know. There's a new Renault Austral coming in the next time I'm with you.
All right, Gerry, thanks for joining us. Gerry Murphy in the driving seat, and thank you for joining us today on the programme.
The Motoring Slot, in association with Colm Quinn BMW Select. The ultimate finance at Colm Quinn. Whatever BMW model you choose, BMW Select has tailored finance available that is just as impressive as your new car. Contact Colm Quinn BMW on 091 753 888.
Now I'm joined by Deputy Martin Kenny, Sinn Féin spokesperson for transport, who sits opposite me this morning. Do you know much about electric cars, do you?
Not an awful lot. I got a test of a car for a weekend, electric cars, and they were lovely to drive, brilliant. Very expensive, as we've talked about a moment ago, and the issue I had was living in a rural area with long distance, and you know, I do 1,000 kilometres a week. So the range was the problem, and that's the problem for an awful lot of people who need those kind of cars most, in fact.
Absolutely.
Longer journeys.
Now you're in town, you've various, and we will go through what you're going to be doing in town here, but we're talking about speed limits set to be reduced under the government plan. Is that really going to alleviate the problems we have on our roads?
Well, look, first of all, we've had tragedy all summer, you know, and we're all conscious of that, and so many families have suffered so much because of it. And the reality is, Keith, that all the statistics tell us that speed is one of the major factors in it. And in that context, it's difficult to argue against reducing speed limits. But I think the big issue is, you know, the people who take chances, the reckless people on the road, we all know them. I was going to Donegal yesterday and a guy came up behind me. I was about 5 or 10 kilometres below the speed limit in a red Audi. And the next thing is he swung out past me, past another car, gone in a shot, and took a chance because there was traffic coming.
Yeah.
And it's people like that. That you know, the speed limit on that road wasn't the issue. It was the reckless way in which that driver behaved. And that can cause other drivers to brake or to, you know, it is one of the key factors, I think. So, you know, enforcement of speed limits is one of the major issues as well.
Yeah. Now, I live in a road and it's a country road, so it's a thin, so one car at a time. But the speed limit on that is 80 kilometres per hour, which is banana stuff.
Absolutely.
Well, I asked a few people yesterday evening in preparation of you being here today, and I was going to touch Gerry as well. I asked 5 people, if the speed limit on the road was reduced, would you slow down? And do you know what the 5 people said? No.
Yeah, that's a problem.
It's the driving habits of people that we have to be held responsible.
You know, I was just a spokesperson for quite a long time. And one of the issues you have in regard to law is that law has to be proportionate. You know, if you set a law which people think is silly, they're going to flout it. So, you know, sometimes we have roads that are quite good, that are a straight road, and if you put a speed limit very low on that, everybody is going to break it.
Absolutely.
So it has to be appropriate.
Common sense.
And I think, you know, there are also, the road you talk about, you know, and I live in rural Ireland as well, and an awful lot of the roads are twisty and windy, and there's no way you should be travelling 80 kilometres an hour on them. But that is a sort of the base rate that you have. But I think, you know, what this should do, and I hope we have to see the detail of it, is that it should give the local authorities the flexibility on roads like that to reduce the speed limit, and also on roads which are appropriate for to have the speed limit as it is. Because as I say, a lot of these problems are more about driver behaviour than the actual limits. But that doesn't mean that we don't need to have better limits there, which give people a better guideline, and which hopefully people will adhere to.
So when you're in the next government, because it's a given that Sinn Féin will be part of the next government.
I'm going
on the polls right now. But what can Sinn Féin promise to do to improve it? Because, like, there's a lunatic went down the road, I hate using that word, on a motorbike last night, and I was just out doing a bit of gardening, and he went down at 100 kilometres, 120 kilometres down the road. Mm-hmm. There's no snowball's chance that a cat would survive that man.
Yeah. or himself.
Was a man or himself. Mm-hmm. But how do you educate people? Is there not technology in place from point A to point B? It'll take you 10 minutes to get there, and if you get there in 4 minutes, you've broken the law.
Yeah, well, there is technology for that, and that's they're bringing that in on some of the motorways for to ensure that that can happen. But I suppose you can't have that on every road, and you can't have a guard at every bend on every road. And you can't, we have to have, you know, personal responsibility in all of this as well. But there's other issues we also need to deal with. And you mentioned about, some of the rural roads. You know, we have areas where we have a lot of accidents happen, where we have a series of bends or where we have junctions that are dangerous and all of that. And every local authority in the country are always looking for funds from central government to deal with those, safety measures to be imposed on those roads. And very often they only get a proportion of what they need or a small amount of it, or they have 10 jobs they need to do and they only get funding for 3 of them. You know, we need to see an effort made for to ensure that money can be put in place for to make those roads safer, and also so that people will drive safer on them, and that will require enforcement, unfortunately, because unless people are forced to have a good habit, unfortunately they don't have it.
I was listening to some of the commentary indeed where they had a slow day on Monday. Monday was a slow day in the country. Why in the name of all this good and holy did the Gardaí put out on the 7 o'clock bulletins on all radio stations, including this, that it was a slow Monday and that people had to slow down? Why not just make every day a slow day and catch them?
Well, I suppose, from the guards' point of view, I'm not always defending them, but from their point of view, what they wanted to do was have a day where they get that message through to people, I suppose that's the reason for that. But you're right, every day everybody has to be responsible. People take reckless chances. And that's what I see as being one of the main causes of a lot of the accidents. Yeah. And the people that take those chances continually take them.
But then can I ask you, Deputy Martin Kenny, Sinn Féin spokesperson for transport, that red Audi that passed you out on the way home to Donegal yesterday, could you make a Garda complaint about that? But if you do, you have to go and make a statement. Because I often rang the Garda and said, I saw this fella, will you come in and make a statement? I don't want to go to court to make a statement.
But you don't.
To cop that fella on.
Yeah, and in fairness, I know, speaking to local guards, that they often get a call from someone saying, I seen such a car, such a number, it went by me at an awful speed or whatever, and the guards will look up who owns that car and they'll give them a ring and they'll say, look, we heard you were speeding on that road at an awful speed and you need to cop yourself. Now, I have had experience where they have done that.
Okay.
But I'm not saying, maybe your experience has been different. Well, I didn't get the call, it wasn't me, but I know other people that have put that call into the guards and they have responded to it.
Because anytime I put the call in, they'll say, will you come in and make a statement? Yeah. I say no.
No, well, I mean, obviously it depends on what guard you get, and somebody who's reasonably proactive will take the number of the car, check out who owns it, give them a call and say, you need to cop yourself on.
But I mean, the Gardaí, we the public could be the custodians for the Gardaí if that process was simplified.
Of course it would, yeah. Of course it would. Yeah. And there needs to be better cooperation in regard to all of that, and less of the red tape. And while I know guards need to act on something that's solid, that it can't be, somebody trying to shop in their neighbour because they have some dislike against them or something. You have incidents of that. But I think that's very uncommon, in fairness. Mm. And in most people who are genuine want to see the road safer. And I think there is an option for people to do that, certainly.
What do you think of Eamon Ryan as Minister for Transport?
I know Eamon Ryan, and in my view, Eamon is a decent guy that wants to do the right thing, but I think he's too fixated on the wrong things very often. I absolutely understand that we do need better public transport, and we absolutely need to see investment in that. We also need to see, alternative means of travel. We need to see bike lanes, and we need to see greenways and all of those things. However, I think his fixation on that means that he has taking his eye off other stuff that is very important as well. And, one of the issues we have here in Galway is the like of the Ring Road, which we want to see built to relieve traffic for people coming in from Connemara. We also need to see, in the meantime, while we're waiting for that to happen, we've waited a long time already, we need to see things like, better public transport. Like, anyone coming into the city on a bus doesn't get here until after 9 o'clock, and that needs to change.
But the whole thing is so slow. It's the procedures that are slow, and here we are with Umbor Planola waiting for them to make a decision. Well, depending on what that decision is, we're going to go to Europe at that stage. I mean, I'd be well retired and pushing a buggy around the place, please God, at that stage, because it's going to take so long.
Yeah, that's one of the problems we have in Ireland, is that everything, is in slow motion, and it doesn't mean you live longer if you live life in slow motion. But certainly that seems to be the case. Our bureaucracy that we have around an awful lot of these things, has caused huge issues and huge problems. But we do need to see, proper infrastructure put in place. I mean, the West and the Northwest is an area that's a laggard in Europe we're well below, both in for the income that people have to live in, but yeah. particularly in regard to infrastructure. And if we can get infrastructure right, if we can get proper roads, if we can get proper rail, if we can get proper communication services in place, you know, we can develop and grow and take, if you relieve Dublin and try and bring more jobs and more opportunity to the west and to the areas which have been left behind for so long.
What has you in Galway, can I ask you, Deputy?
Well, look, it's an initiative that the party is doing, and I'm here today with Mairead Farrell and our MEP, Chris McManus, and we're meeting a number of different groups in Galway. We're meeting Galway Port to talk about the developments there. Mary Lou McDonald met them last year, and I'm looking forward to that, to find out exactly what their proposals are and what they're doing. It's very exciting to see that happen, and we need to see that type of thing go ahead.
It needs support.
It needs support, and that's certainly why I'm here. I'm also meeting with the people in the West on Track for the railway, which we need to see develop right the way up to Sligo and beyond, for to have the Western Rail Corridor opened up completely so that people can get to work and have alternative means of transport. We're also, going to be talking to the public. We're going to do a little bit of a canvas and get around and meet people on the doorsteps as well, with some of the local councillors and local council candidates. So, you know, it's really about getting out there and getting a response from the public as to what needs to happen, how the country needs to change, what that change will look like, and how we can deliver that. And we in Sinn Féin, something that I was in Donegal yesterday, and one of the things that some of the people were talking about, you know, the cabinet table, if it's a Sinn Féin government, will be made up of people like Piers Doherty, Mairead Farrell, perhaps even myself, Rose Conwy Walsh in Mayo, a lot of people from the West, from the Northwest, a lot of people from rural Ireland, and that will be a marked difference on the cabinets we've had in the past.
You really are in election mode, aren't you?
Absolutely. Absolutely, you know, and we're determined to make that change.
Otherwise, yeah.
No, we're determined to make the change happen, and we're determined to tell people that, you know, we can be trusted. Okay. We will not let them down.
Well, the polls are saying you are. So who's your favourite partner going in then? I mean, there seems to be a bit of a love in between Fianna Fáil and Sinn Féin. Is that going to be the partnership?
I think that will be determined by the results of the next election. Certainly it would be our ambition to be a sole party in government. That would be the best way we feel to do it, and certainly if we could, we would like to have a government without either Fianna Fáil or Fine Gael. They've dominated politics in Ireland for 100 years, and we'd like to have different partners, but that depends on the electorate, and we'll have to leave that up to them.
And do you see some of the people that will be casting their vote still have concerns over Sinn Féin, over what went on in the past? How do you turn that around?
Well, I think, certainly the establishment and the main political parties will try and play on that. I think Ireland has matured. We've come a long way. The Good Friday Agreement is over 25 years old as far as the conflict is concerned in the North. And, we're determined that, the difficulties of the past are not going to be an inhibiting factor to the future that we want to build.
It's good to have you in studio. Thank you
for
joining us today, Deputy Martin Kenny, joining us. So again, you'll be on a walkabout. He'll be in the port area. But if they want to contact Mairead Farrell's office, they'll give you further details.
We are indeed, and we're also going to the college today as well.
Come in, Mairead, you're grand. Come in and take the photograph. She's kind of skulking around there, wants to take the photograph.
You'd know I'm a millennial, wouldn't you?
So where are you bringing him today on this walkabout before I move on?
So we're bringing him back the west. I think it's a good spot to head to see and to chat to people, to local people, just to see what the stories are, what the main issues are. I think when you're knocking doors, the main thing is to ask people, what do they want to raise? Super. I always call it, give out to your local TD day.
Okay. What I want you to do, will you bring him into Ernie DC, will you?
Yeah.
Just bring him into Ernie DC. He has a shop down there, yeah. Right. And Ernie will give you what's what now, I'll tell you.
Perfect. I look forward to that.
Quick commercial break, and you're welcome anytime. Thanks for joining us today on the programme. Deputy Martin Kenny and Deputy Mairead Farrell in studio, and they're heading back west shortly, so they are. Quick commercial break. We're back just after these. Now, very good morning to you. Welcome into today's programme. What a busy programme it's been, but Galway Samaritans are appealing for volunteers, and they're having an open meeting next week, and I'm joined by Galway Samaritans Director, Catherine Emerson, who sits opposite me today. Catherine, morning to you.
Good morning, Keith, and thanks for having me.
You're sitting in the hot seat today, so yeah, many have sat in it beforehand. The Samaritans, again, the work that you do is just absolutely amazing, but you're having an open meeting to try and encourage people to become volunteers, and it's taking place next Monday, September the 11th at 8 p.m, and you're using the wonderful facilities in Cree House in Myola Lane in Newcastle there as well. Again, it's an education process, isn't it?
That's right, Keith. We provide a confidential listening service for people in distress. We provide that 24 hours a day, free, to anyone who wants to call us, and we do it all with volunteers. So obviously, if you have time to give, to volunteer for Samaritans, we don't just chuck you onto the phone and you're answering calls straight away. There's an education.
There's a huge training process in this, and then there's a mentoring process. And I mean, it takes a few months to get everything up and running.
Exactly. So Monday night will be just the first step in a volunteer journey. If you come along, there'll be myself and Sean Branner, who came along here today with me, and we'll tell you what it involves. And then after that, there's a 9-week training program and then a 2-month mentoring process. So for the first 2 months, you're taking calls, you're listening to people in distress, but you're doing that alongside an experienced Samaritan volunteer who can help you and guide you.
And Catherine, when we say volunteer then, having spoken to many of your colleagues down through the years, what type of commitment are you looking for?
As I say, everybody who answers the phone in Galway Samaritans and now also in Castlebar Samaritans is a volunteer. So none of us are paid. We all give up our time.
Yeah.
And we give up about 3 hours listening time a week. So that's a morning, an afternoon, an early evening, a late evening, or most of our calls come in through the night. Yes.
Yeah. So that's your busiest time, isn't it?
That's our busiest time. Most of our calls come in between 8 in the evening and 2 in the morning.
And that's when people are at their most vulnerable and they just don't know where to turn, and that's why they turn to the Samaritans.
Sometimes people who have friends, family support during the day, at night they don't feel they can pick up the phone to bother them. So they pick up the phone and they talk to somebody who's given up their time to listen to them.
To a volunteer.
To a volunteer.
So on Monday night next, September the 11th at 8 p.m, if they want to go along, there's plenty of parking there. So there is
plenty of parking.
It's a beautiful building. And so you'll give the information, you'll take the questions from the floor, mm-hmm. and then you can ask them to sign up from there.
Exactly. And if anyone is interested in volunteering with Samaritans, but they can't come along next Monday at 8 p.m, if they email recruitment@galwaysamaritans.ie, they'll be put in touch with Sean, who'll tell them how they can take the journey forward.
So it's just one more then, recruitment@galwaysamaritans.ie, and it comes into Sean from there then, who's a volunteer, and he takes it then from there. When you say, you know, the training process and the 9 weeks and all of that, mm-hmm. if somebody's not able for it, do you find that out fairly early on in the process?
We can do. It depends why somebody is not able for it. Some people are nervous and hesitant about talking to people they don't know and putting them at ease. And generally, we can overcome that with training and mentoring. But sometimes it just isn't right for you, or people find that they don't have the time. And we do tell people if we don't think it's going to work. And they also tell us if they don't think it's going to work for them. We have support volunteers who help us in other ways. So if you're interested in supporting our work, but you don't feel that you could take calls, there are other ways that you can help Samaritans by fundraising, by coming and giving school talks. There's plenty you can do. We're always looking for volunteers.
But you listen, you don't give opinions, you never judge anybody.
No, we listen, we hear what people are telling us, we reflect it back to them. You know yourself, usually you know what is best for you, and nobody can tell you better than you can tell yourself. So we just listen to people, we don't tell them what to do.
So you open the door for them to see exactly what they themselves need, that they know what they need to do.
Exactly.
So you're facilitating the conversation.
We talk through what people's options are, what the scenario is for them, how they see the world. And at the end of the call, their situation hasn't changed, but maybe they see things a little bit more clearly.
Do you ever get cards or a call back to say, listen, thank you for listening?
Oh, we do, yes, and particularly at Christmas. And because we're there Christmas Eve, Christmas Day, we're there 24 hours. And around that time, we do get a lot of cards and people saying, you help me.
In the headphones I'm getting, is there a minimum age? There would be, wouldn't there, 18?
You'd need to be 18, but there's no maximum age.
Yeah.
Our oldest volunteer is 90-something and still going strong.
Wow. Yeah. I think I could know that person actually in question. I think they joined us many years ago. If they want to get further details then, and you can't go to Cree House Moyola Lane this coming Monday night, at 8 p.m. Try and get there for about 7:45. How long will it take?
About an hour.
Don't be looking at poor Sean. He can't control what you do.
About an hour.
About an hour from there. And again, you can make your mind up. You can go away from that meeting on Monday night, and you can go home. You can talk to friends and family, and then you can decide whether you want to volunteer or not. Listen, thank you so much for joining us today, and keep up the good work, and thank you indeed to you and to your colleagues for the ongoing work that you do. But Catherine, thank you for joining us today. Further details from recruitment at GalwaySamaritans.ie for further details. Let's go to news at 11. We're back just after these.